the little glass angel, which is giving light also, and the world globe for serving. Well, the world globe for serving is certainly very, I don't know the English word, but like specially made for you, because you did a lot of serving around the world. Originally from Australia, 37 years ago, came into Gyan, and Daddy Janki gave you the name Morni. Didi Manmohini, okay. Oh, Didi's peacock, because it's the name of a female peacock. Yes, yes. So it was Didi Manmohini who gave you the name. And you first started serving in Asia for 30 years, which at that time, like, I don't know exactly when you went to Asia, in 81. So that must have been, well, quite challenging at that time for a Western woman to do a serve for Baba. And I know you, not personally, but I know that you obviously have met many challenges and obstacles, and you were victorious, so you can share a lot, I think. And also what I would like to say, because we have had you before on the parents' retreat, and Morni Ben is very good in the deep churnings about real life, what comes to you and how to become victorious. And now, like 4 years, you are a Madhubani Vasi?
Actually, I'm traveling around India. I live out of a suitcase.
You live out of a suitcase, but it's like you're stationed in Madhubani or not?
I've spent a week here in the last 6 months.
Okay. Well, it's like base. The base. And for the future of power, you are a coordinator of the future of power here in India. And maybe you would like to share something about that too. Mm. Okay. So we have a 2 minute meditation. First, there's our flower sister. The rose, full of the fragrances of all the virtues.
So I remember back to the early days when we used to be able to write to Baba when we had problems and expect a reply. And I remember one sister that I was staying with. She wrote to Baba about some situation that she was in. And Baba's reply was, Baba has put you on the battlefield. Full stop. That's all Baba replied. And I think this is what this is about. I mean, we can't achieve becoming masters of the world and being remembered in all of these stories and fables as the heroes and heroines, if we didn't have obstacles, could we? It wouldn't make a story at all. Well, here was a sister, she sat around all day remembering God and became a hero. That's not what the stories are about. The stories are all about our courage, our bravery, our love for God, our determination, all of these things. And so we are on a battlefield against Maya. And I remember one young brother, he was only about 19, and he was struggling in his Brahmin life, maybe 22 or something, he's a bit older, but he was struggling in his Brahmin life for about a year. He said, I'm getting up at Amrit Vela, I'm going to class, you know, he was doing service, I'm doing whatever I can do, but maybe this path is not for me because I'm not happy. And it was hard to convince him that, you know, we have to just go through these times, because he was young. He hadn't experienced the world. He hadn't experienced relationships and everything. So he decided there might be a path that brought more happiness. But I can tell you, I don't know, I've lost touch with him now, but at least 15 years later, he hadn't really found that happiness. And in contrast, there was a brother who was about 60 years old, around about the same time, more or less saying the same thing. But he said, I've been in the world, and I know there's nothing there. See, that was the difference. One knew the world and knew that there was nothing there. But when people are young, like you all have children, it's quite hard for them to realize that, you know, even in the world, you won't find that happiness. So that brother that was 60, he just kept with his practice. And of course, after about a year or so, he got a breakthrough and he's been doing very well since then. But it's something that we should keep in mind. Just because we're not happy doesn't mean that we're not on the right path. Because we are challenging Maya, it's not going to be easy to follow a path of celibacy, you know, at a young age, to, you know, not be in the world and, you know, doing what other young people do. And so, you know, when we challenge Maya, we have to be prepared for that challenge. And my latest kind of slogan is, you have to be bulletproof. And I consider myself now as bulletproof. No one can kill me. You can try. You can try as much as you want. But I'm bulletproof. Because often we also hear these stories of people who have had very big challenges from other Brahmins often, sometimes even from seniors. And you feel as if people are trying to kill you, even kill your Brahmin life. But we have to be bulletproof. Doesn't matter. But not to leave Baba for anything, for any reason. Because where are we going to go? And have you known Brahmins who have left? They're not usually. I mean, I know very few that are happy. It's not an easy life because we have tasted Baba's love. We have tasted all of the beautiful things. So maybe because of, you know, some personal challenges, we feel it's difficult to come back into the family. But it's really, as I've seen mostly, a state of suffering and sadness. And so I also thought from the beginning that, you know, there's two sides to an army. And I know who's going to win this battle. It's the Pandavas and Shaktis. So why would I go on to the other side when that side's going to be defeated? And both sides are a struggle. It's not that if you leave Baba, things won't be a struggle. Things will be just as much a struggle. It'll be a different struggle. But at least if you're with Baba, the struggle, you know, is on the side of victory. So definitely there will be a good return of that. But on the other side, it's just a struggle for nothing, actually. So if we use our intellect, also we can just be very clear that this is the only side that's worth fighting on, not the other side. But we do get victory through obstacles, and we won't, of course, get any victory if we don't fight the battle. As I said, you know, you're not going to be remembered as heroes and heroines without going to battle. But it's very good to be able to identify what is the core issue that is causing most of the obstacles. And I'm not sure if it's the same one for all of us. You can reflect on this yourself. But I know for me, the core issue was a lack of self-respect. If I look back now at any battle that I've been in, it's been because of my lack of self-respect. And yet people who have known me from the beginning probably wouldn't think I don't have self-respect. It's not that my self-respect was so low, but I just know from experience that no one really has self-respect fully intact. And I've often been surprised. I'll often hear myself say, even she? Even she doesn't have self-respect? Because you see people that look like they've got everything. And yet when you get to hear their stories, which we often do, because of teaching the Course, people do open up what's inside. There's not a soul that has deep self-respect. But from the very beginning, I think the first challenge was living in a center. Because, invariably someone would point out some weakness, or you would see it yourself, you would make a mistake. And I used to feel, how can I live in a center? How can I be a teacher when I'm still like this? And I used to feel, I shouldn't be in Baba's center, I'm not good enough. All of these kinds of thoughts used to come. And this was like the initial stages, I remember, of this lack of self-respect. But then one day, I just got real. And I think this is a very important step on facing all the obstacles, and that is to accept that it's going to take time. It took Brahma Baba how many years? 33. So what do you think? Are we going to become perfect in 2-3 years, 10 years, 15 years? Now we don't have so much time, but we shouldn't feel that pressure too much either. But we can't expect that all of our weaknesses are just going to go, can we? And I think this is what really helped me a lot. And I remember one soul pointing out some weakness in me, and I just said to her, yeah, I know, I've still got that weakness. It's taking me time to change. I'm trying, but I don't know how long it will take. I'm sorry. You know? I mean, I just admit it, and I think, well, that's a fact. And not feel bad about it, just accept. And I said to her, I said, you know, if you keep seeing that weakness, you're going to trouble yourself a lot. I can't change any faster than what I'm changing. So I suggest you just stop focusing on it, because it's only going to trouble you. And nothing I can do about it. I'm doing whatever I can. And so having a very realistic approach to where I'm at and just accepting myself as I am, what I am at this point, is really a huge step in being patient, being easy, being kind, being understanding towards the self. So being realistic has been probably one of the biggest steps that I found was so important in our life. And being realistic about others also. Because if I can't change so quickly, how can I expect others to change? And that's the other very big mistake that we often make. And that is trying to change others when we know that we can't. You know, and that's what they say, the definition of a crazy person. Do you know? The definition of a crazy person is someone who keeps doing the same thing and expects to get a different result. But we tend to do that. We keep trying to change others in the same way and we get the same result. So we have to learn and be wise and not be crazy in this kind of way. And the other thing about this self-respect is it comes in so many different ways. And I would say what has been the experience, which I'm sure we all go through, but my own personal experience, has been that feeling of being left out. Have you ever had that feeling? In fact, I think parents feel it a lot, because often because of our situations, we can't do this, we can't do that, And then we feel, oh, it's not fair, why is the drama like that? And I should also, you know, get the chance to live in a center, whatever the thoughts are. But this comparison and subtle and not so subtle forms of jealousy. So being able to just accept the role that I have been given in this drama, and not just accept it, but appreciate it and welcome it and perfect it. Because that's the reality. And it's actually a form of attachment to want things to be different than what they are. Because we have this, you know, kind of idea that things should be as I want them to be. But that's just being attached to my own ideas. And the sorrow comes from that. The sorrow comes from that attachment, just like any kind of attachment will bring sorrow. But I look back now, especially in regard to self-respect, and really appreciate being left out of situations and meetings or whatever they were, because it always challenged my self-respect. And I remember one particular situation where they had this group called International Service Group, something like this. And I was in Madhuban, and all of my peer group were in this meeting, and I was the only one not in this meeting. And in the beginning, I would say, people say, aren't you in that meeting? Don't you have to go? I'd say, no, I'm not in the meeting, and I was okay. I kind of just accepted it. But then after being asked this about 10 times, are you not in that meeting? Are you not in that meeting? Then it was finally, no, I'm not in that meeting. So I saw how over the time, you know, I don't know if I was suppressing it or what was going on, but eventually it got to me and I felt, yeah, why aren't I in that meeting? But I didn't want to ask to be in the meeting because I don't think that's functional. You know, if the yogi wants to do something, they should be able to ask the people that they think are needed, and we should all just accept that with humility and just let it go on. And what I was observing is what kind of values I was putting on that meeting. It's like my whole self-worth was depending on whether I was in that meeting or not. And I was thinking, you know, I'm not in the meeting because I'm not good enough, or what is this, you know? And I was just, it really, by the time I let it go in, it created so much sorrow. Maybe 5 days worth of crying. I mean, really serious sorrow. But I still didn't ask if I could be in that meeting, and I didn't. I just thought, I'm just going to watch myself. This is my stuff. It's nothing to do with the meeting. I can't blame anyone that they didn't invite me to this meeting, which is a tendency. And I was just watching inside and thinking, what's going on? Does your self-respect depend on something so small? And anyway, it's just a meeting. I mean, do you want to be in the meeting? It was in Madhuban, otherwise I can just enjoy being in Madhuban. But all the value we put on something is our added kind of assessments and things. And then eventually afterwards, when I'd kind of come out of it, I talked to Didi Nirmala and told her what I went through. And she said, why didn't you just ask to be in the meeting? And I said, I don't want to give in to myself like that. I don't want to. If I do, then the next time, what will I do? The same thing? Just keep asking, can I be in the meeting so that I don't lose my self-respect? That's not a way to go forward. And then she said, the only reason why you weren't in the meeting and all the others were is because they all asked to go in the meeting.
said, otherwise half of them weren't supposed to be in the meeting. You know? So what I was reading into it was also not real. Actually, half it was actually meant for those people who don't live in centers, who are doing special service, to give them a kind of a group, a peer group to work together with. And so my whole interpretation anyway was absolutely wrong and all in my imagination. But also, I was the only one that hadn't asked, can I go in the meeting? So, and I was so glad, because since then, I'm seldom affected if I'm in something or not in something. And that's such a freedom. Because, you know, I might be able to share a little bit about this future of power. But even with that, you know, sometimes I'm in, sometimes I'm out as far as the program. It doesn't matter. And I met somebody. He's the head of media now in India, Rajat Sharma from Indian News. And he said, when I employ anyone, because we talk about soft power as opposed to hard power, he said, when I employ anyone, I always try to select people who can let go. Because if people can't let go, they're such a problem in the organization. And you can see that, no? In our Brahmin world, probably in your work as well. When people can't let go, the work can't flow smoothly, because you've always got to think about everyone's, you know, egos and keep massaging people's egos and including people here and there that maybe is not for the benefit of the program, but just to keep people happy. So he said, I always try to employ people that can let go. So I can really say that if we face the obstacles, I don't think obstacles themselves bring victory, but I think facing the obstacles brings the victory. Because you can't overcome all these things unless you face them. You know, there's so many who would just go and ask, can I be in that meeting? And they're not facing their own stuff that's coming up. You know? So it's when I can face myself. And I would say that probably the greatest thing I have learnt in Brahmin life is not to blame. Because whenever we're blaming, we're not changing. We're always seeing it's the other one that has to change, that has to adjust, that has to do this and that. But when I stop blaming, when I can see that, I can see so clearly my stuff. But as long as I'm blaming, I can't see my stuff at all. But it doesn't mean also, which is also a tricky thing, that I'm always to blame. And this was one particular situation I was in. It was quite a big challenge that went on for about a year with a particular... everything's a balance, because I'd learnt that lesson so well of not blaming others, that when I went through this situation, I couldn't kind of put it to rest. Because I don't know about you, but I need to understand something so that I can put it to rest. And I couldn't understand what had happened in this particular situation. And I remember I was in Oxford at that time, and we were having a silence day, and I went very deeply into what was all this about. And it was very strange, because all my realizations was kind of about blaming the other person. I was saying they were wrong. And I thought, what kind of realization is that? I can't stand in front of the class and say, I had a realization today, the other person was wrong, not me. But of course there must be a time when the other person actually has wronged, you know? I mean, my reaction is my reaction. That's what I have to deal with. But we also need to know where we stand in this, because if I have made a mistake, I need to correct that. But if the other person has done something wrong, I need to accept, forgive, whatever that other work is. But it was kind of, it took me so long because I trained myself so well not to blame the other person. So it was a very unusual and strange realization to realize that actually the other person was wrong. So everything requires balance. And one of the creations of obstacles that we do to ourselves is because of not understanding what is perfection. We often think that perfection is like the top of a mountain and we have to reach there. And because of that, we can become extreme. You know, like, I don't know about you, but when I first came to Baba, I was a bit like that because of being immature. You know, Baba said, don't listen to waste. So I remember visiting my mother and being so detached because she was just talking waste. It hurt her so much. But that kind of thing where we just go to an extreme and we think, this is where I have to go, Baba says, and that's what I have to do. But where actually is perfection? Where is it? Is it up there? It's absolutely here. It's absolutely in the balance. And when I realize that, I think I save myself from creating a lot of obstacles. Because when I can work on the balance, then there's maturity in that. But whenever I'm kind of going to an extreme, I think it's immaturity. And so we create also, don't we? We create our own obstacles, leave aside other people. And I remember one particular thing I had created for myself for 16 years. I created an obstacle. I made myself so tired. I was living in Hong Kong for 22 years. But after the first 16 years, because I thought, living in another culture, I should learn to adjust and adapt and, you know, be part of them and liked by them. And so I made so much effort. And after 16 years, I was so exhausted from this effort. And I said to Daddy Jenki, I've tried everything, 16 years, I've tried everything, and I haven't got any closer. And I feel exhausted. And she just said to me, she said, don't try, just be a Mahavir. And I thought, what? Don't try? You mean I wasted 16 years of wrong effort? You know, it was quite a realization of how we can make wrong effort for so long. And then what happened? I stopped trying. First of all, they didn't really even notice. So that's how much impact the effort was having. But secondly, what I saw is I got closer because I was being me. You know, when you try to be like somebody else, you're not real, you're not yourself. You're kind of a bit false, you know, but with good intention I made that that effort. So that was a big realization too, that we should make good efforts, but in the right direction. And I remember not long after that I was with my dad. In Australia the roads are very long and, you know, you go fast. And we were late to go somewhere and he was going 110 kilometers. And I said, you're making very good efforts, but I think we're going in the wrong direction. And that's what was happening, you know. So you can make very good efforts, but is it in the right direction? Because otherwise you're just wasting time. Then we had to use all that time to come back again. We'd maybe gone 50 kilometers in the wrong direction because we're going so fast. So, you know, on this path also, we should, you know, keep checking that our efforts are in the right direction. And, you know, and that's where we're so fortunate to have seniors. You know, that we can just share our efforts, share our journey, and just see what their comments are. You know, it's not even that we have to go and ask for advice, but, you know, we have got seniors there that have experience, and we can take a lot from that. Like Dadi, she actually was able to stop that wrong effort. Then I stopped making that effort, and I thought, okay, now I'm not making effort, but am I a Mahavir? And this brings us a little bit to the program that I'm working on, The Future of Power. Because basically what it's focusing on, just in essence, you know, everyone in the world is talking about there being a shift of power from the West back to the East, as a lot of the Western countries are facing bankruptcy and, you know, things are going down. So what we're doing is meeting all the leaders in India to talk about what kind of power India will bring to the world. And we're suggesting that they bring back soft power, which means spirituality, values, culture. And what's been interesting, I've met, I would say at least 2,000 really top leaders, from the head of nuclear science and DG of police and, you know, Sachin Tendulkar and whoever else you want to mention, political leaders, sports leaders, business leaders. And all of them believe in soft power. All Indian leaders that I've met believe in soft power. And about 70% strongly believe in it. They say it is the only power that can achieve anything. And so this is also what I'd like to mention in regard to effort. Soft power is very effective compared to hard power. Think about it. It means, first of all, it means the power of the mind. So really, like I read something years ago, it said, few leaders realize how little they have to do. And since then, I experience nearly everything I think happens. We don't need hard effort, we need right effort. Right thinking, right awareness, right concentration, right. So that's soft power, that we get most things done with a thought. So when Dadi says, don't try, be a Mahavir, that's what it means to me. It means get things done through elevated consciousness. Soft power means to use love and communication rather than force wherever possible. You know, it's all of these things. And, you know, I've been in this project now for nearly 4 years, so I guess it's gone into me. But when I was thinking of my New Year resolution, I thought, I don't want to use hard power. I want to live a life of soft power that's very effective, you know, powerful. Not just, doesn't mean, soft power doesn't mean weak. Soft power means very effective, but non-violent. And so, you know, when we're talking about overcoming obstacles, you know, often when they're, are obstacles, for example, your children aren't doing what you feel they should do, and not just feel, that you know that they should do. How to really make soft power effective? How to make it work. You know, because if we can't do it, what are we talking about in the world? What are we talking about with other people if we're not able to use this soft power? And if soft power doesn't work on Brahmin children, how is it supposed to work in the world, actually? You know, it should, shouldn't it? It should work on them more than on anyone else. So this is, I think, my New Year resolution, something I'd like to suggest to you, that you really experiment and go deeply into how to overcome any obstacle using soft power. Because it's very easy, out of habit, to go into hard power. Bossiness, control, threatening, all of those kinds of things. But this would be a very good project, especially for parents to take up. Because I know one sister, she was teaching the living values, and she just finished a workshop for 2-3 hours, and then she went to school to teach the children. Within 5 minutes, she was shouting at them, just what she was telling, you know, in the living values we shouldn't do. And she said, you know, it was so embarrassing for me to see myself behave like that, because I'd just been talking about it for a few hours, and then I went and did the opposite. That's a very interesting thing, because that often happens, do you find? One brother told me, when he was giving the course, he told this person in Australia, swearing is a bit of a habit there, and he told this student, since I've been meditating, I don't swear anymore. And that student said, wow, yeah, that's really great. It's really gross, isn't it? And in that same lesson, he swore. And imagine swearing in a lesson. I mean, how would you swear in a lesson? But this is a strange thing of the mind, that it often does just what you're saying. Do you get that experience? So all of this needs to be kind of studied. What's going on? And of course, you know, one thing is that whatever we are visualizing, we're drawing it to ourselves. So he was visualizing himself swearing. So it was kind of in his mind. But very great and wonderful to study the mind and how it's working, and also to study it with your children, because they're also little yogis. So it's very good to bring them up with this awareness and understanding of the greatness of the mind. So there's 15 minutes more, and I thought it'd be good to have question, answers, comments from your side. Yeah. Yeah, well, with perfection, I mean, one thing is that it's not difficult, really, to be anything. Like, we can be detached. We can be loving. We can be firm. But to be completely balanced is really an art. And even as somebody said, the art of meditation is being concentrated and yet relaxed. Because you'll see that we separate all these things. We're either relaxed or we're concentrated. But you can see how when we bring all these things into balance, it's the art of life. Baba says being entertaining and being mature. You know, and you find the personalities that have this are very attractive, right? Like Jagdish Bhai. You know, he used to talk about love with such a deadpan face. He'd be talking so deep and beautiful about love, and it was so interesting. You know, so when you see a personality that's both at the same time, there's something unique in that. But Baba also said that perfection is contentment. And if you think about it, contentment means to fill your content. So all of us have a different content. We will all be perfect in our own way, because we're not all going to be clones. We're going to be all unique individuals, but we have to fill our content. And I remember one situation, incident where I was on a bus with all the Madhavan Nawasis. I was a very new Brahmin, and Sister Mohini was very young at that time, you know, little Mohini that stays in Madhavan. And she stood on the seat of the bus, held onto the pole, and sang to everyone. And I thought, if someone did this in Australia, we would have said, that's very extrovert. She shouldn't be doing that. You know, we would have judged it. And I was just watching all the Madhavan Nawasis just enjoy it. I didn't see any judgment, any comment. You know, and I thought, you know, what is perfection? Just expressing yourself, being who you are. You know, and you in Madhavan, now you're not, we're not so aware of it maybe, but there used to be one brother who used to wear an army uniform. He used to do the post, but he was always in an army uniform. There's another brother that didn't talk for, I don't know how many years, 14 years or something. The one with the long beard, the gardener in Pandav Bhavan. But you find all these unique characters, and that's what I think we should learn from. That there's no stereotype as a yogi. You know, and our three daddies have been a very good example of that. Daddy Gulzar, Daddy G, that many of you met, and Daddy Janki. They're absolutely different in the way they express and live their Brahmin life. You can't even compare them. But you can't say one is better than the other. Just three unique, beautiful individuals. And I think there's a reason why we had these very different examples in front of us at the same time. But again, judgment gets in the way of perfection a lot. Which is perfectionism. You know? That's when we're like perfectionists, like a disease.
Just my question is, as you said, whatever I think is my obstacle always, whatever I think, immediately I always do the opposite in my mind. So just for example, today morning I was thinking, Baba in the morning says, eat with me in silence. And so I decided, okay, today I'm going to have my breakfast in silence. And I did opposite. Right away I took my plate and I went outside, I saw somebody and I just was talking. But the moment when I started talking, immediately I realized that and I caught myself, and at least I started the conversation. I cannot stop in the middle. And then I diverted to Baba's knowledge. I asked some questions and he started talking about that. But I noticed myself so many times in that way, doing that for small and big things. So can you suggest me what kind of effort we need to make, or some yukti, or what we need to do for that?
Yeah, it seems that we need to talk to ourselves. I think when we surprise ourselves, it's because we don't know ourselves that well. So I think we need a very good communication with ourselves so that we don't get these kinds of surprises.
I would like to ask you, I liked the question of the sister also. Baba last season asked us to destroy our deepest samskar, because everyone has one deep samskar, like you said, you know, you are battling it for years. Maybe you could have an example of what kind of reflective questions, or could you ask yourself to go into the depth of what needs to be done to deal with that deep samskar, which you all have?
Well, as I said, I think the first and foremost is the the not blaming, because most of the time we don't face ourselves because of that. So that's a very big one. But also we can, you know, like Baba's given so many charts, but last year he asked us just to check our happiness. And I found that that was one of the best charts I've been able to keep, just to see when do I lose my happiness and why? Because I only lose my happiness because of my sanskars. So I found that such a simple and telling, you know, there's no arguing it. You can see immediately what you're doing when you lose your happiness. So I found that was a very good chart for simple and clear. And you can't argue it, because when you lose your happiness, it's a clear indication of some old sanskar coming up. There was one other situation that I didn't mention that others have been able to relate to, and that was a situation where I was feeling that I was being pushed out. You know? And you know, if you get that feeling of being pushed out, because of the feeling that you go into, you attract more of that experience. But what happened in that feeling, it only lasted for about 2 or 3 hours. And what I find is very helpful is just being able to see some angle to get out of this, you know, spiral of negativity. Because when you start to have negative feelings, you start to really go down. And, you know, the original picture of the cycle had an Om in the middle. So what I feel is that's me in the middle. And there's 360 ways of seeing this situation. I'm just seeing it in one way. But there's 360 ways I can see this. I've got to find the one that frees me, that liberates me. And so I don't know whether I found it. I felt more like Baba gave it to me, because it was pretty quick and very powerful. But from that feeling of pushed out, just this thought came, I'm not being pushed out, I'm being pushed up. And I felt so excited and so like open for what's next. It was like a night and day experience of like depth to height. You know, that kind of. And so if we can find that thought, then that's a great liberation. Another situation was that I was here in Madhuban and Dadi Gulzar was being invited somewhere. And I very easily could have been invited. It was just like 3-4 people, you know. And I had a little bit of maya, like, how come they don't invite me? I could also be there, you know. And I was a little stuck in this, again, for an hour or so. And then I thought, and again, that's what I'm saying, you've got to get the right thought. I thought, it's more important to be like Daddy than to be with Daddy. And when I had that thought, totally liberated, I thought, it's not important to be with Daddy. It's important to be like Daddy. And just with the right thought, we can just liberate ourselves in a second. And I never had another waste thought about it. Once I find that thought in that 360 degrees, I'm out. Otherwise, we get caught in a spin. So I think we have to get more and more clever at finding those thoughts that work for us, which is elevated thoughts. You know, and I think that's becoming easier and easier for me. And I was thinking why, maybe because after so many years of practice, you know, we've had such a practice of negative thoughts. You know, it's been a practice, it's been a habit. So if we practice higher thoughts, then they should come when we need them. Or maybe it's always Baba, I don't know. But it's also sincerity. When we're sincere about being honest and making the right efforts and not getting trapped. You know, like Baba said, he's pleased with an honest heart. So if I keep a sincerity in my effort and don't try to manipulate things and be devious in getting what I want. You know, and what some person was describing as the looking good syndrome. And I haven't had time to go deeply into that, but it's pretty serious, this looking good syndrome. I saw someone who I thought was on the brink of a mental breakdown, and this person said, it's just because she's got the looking good syndrome. You know, not doing things because it's the right thing, but just to look good. In the family, to look good. And I haven't had time to go deeply into that. Maybe that'll be the next class I'll give, but it's a very deep sanskar. And, you know, we've been talking about writing a book called Spiritually Blonde. You know, because there's the dumb blonde, no? But spiritually blonde. Yeah, it's a good topic. So any other questions? We're just coming up to close your time. Oh, that's a big question in 2 minutes. Are you comfortable to go 10 or 15 minutes over and join the end of the queue for gifts, or do you want to leave at 6? What do you say, organizers? Huh? Yeah, 10 or 15 minutes, because you can't answer about meditation in 2 minutes.
Yeah, I'm just trying to repeat the question. I'd like to improve the power of meditation, the quality of meditation, so need some guidance there.
Actually, I find that BKs, I don't know, I'm in India now and have been in Asia, you know, for a long time, but I find a lot of BKs don't practice meditation at all. Really, what I think was what I learned, which is to concentrate and to, you know, it's based on the observation that whatever I think about, I get a feeling. So really choosing what I want to feel and then thinking about that in a concentrated, dedicated way so that I can get an experience. And when I do that, I get an experience. When I just let myself, like, sit and not have any aim, like Baba says we should have an aim in meditation, then not much happens. Sometimes I can get something from Baba, but one of the habits that has crept in is playing music. And personally, I feel it's really a distraction, because a lot of the music we play, this soft music, is relaxing. It's for relaxation. And in my experience, it dulls the mind. It's for relaxation, and meditation's not relaxation. We can do relaxation using meditation, but that's not a high aim. Relaxation's pretty basic. So I feel that silence needs to be appreciated and experienced, so that we know what is that, the golden, you know, sound of silence. Silence is golden, they say, and it really has a beauty of its own. So I feel that this kind of relaxation music is not helpful. Some music, BK music, I find is somewhat okay, and I think that my experience. You experiment and you work out what's good for you. But Girish Bhai from London, this music called Stillness, and there's about 3 or 4 CDs that he has done with his group. And I feel that that a little bit fine-tunes the mind. It does this, you know? Whereas I find the, like, New Age music, it does like this. So it's just like, you know, and the mind just, like this. But some music elevates, but nothing like silence. And listening to Baba's songs, I think is okay for starting, like 5 minutes or a commentary or something. But we're not really yogis if we're sitting and enjoying the songs, I wouldn't say. I think that's entertainment, it's all very nice. But I wouldn't call it meditation. And I've been doing an experiment about this in India, because I go to all the centers all over India. I think I've stayed now in about 35 centers in India for 2 weeks, 10 days, 2 weeks at least. And I asked them, because they never have meditation silence, like never. And I asked them, do you think you need silence for meditation? And I don't impose anything, I don't tell them anything. And over a few days, I said, I'll ask you again in a few days. You experiment and you think about it. And 100% they say, we need silence for meditation. So, you know, what are we doing? And yet, even when I've traveled, you know, I go to centers in the West, whether it was Germany or Spain, and I'll ask the BKs, can we have 2-hour yoga bhati? We're having yoga bhati anyway, with silence, and they're all scared. They all go, oh, like scared. Which is what we used to do. We used to have 5 minutes song, half an hour, 20 minutes silence, 5 minutes. And the songs were really just like a timer more than anything. And very selected. See, that's the thing too. Often in the centers, they're not selecting the music. It's nothing to do with like creating that kind of environment. It's just whatever's on the machine or whatever's there, you know. It's not. So if we want to improve our meditation, we need to think about it. And there's a very good new website designed especially for this. It is designed for beginners, but I think it's not bad for us to go back to it. And that is, it's called learnmeditationonline.org. And it's very basic, simple. So I should see whether I've got my basics right. And also I see there's a difference between meditation and yoga. Meditation is doing some work on myself and getting to know myself, cleaning the subconscious. You know, like when I'm sitting and going into some kind of a sorrow, then at least I should be observing myself and seeing, where is this coming from? And accepting this is my stuff. And, okay, now what do I have to do about this? How am I going to remove this? Oh, it's my lack of self-respect. I have to, you know, so it's really like knowing what's going on inside and doing the inner work. Whereas yoga is that connection where you don't need to think. You can transcend seed stage. You know, where you just go into bliss and... But in neuroscience, they describe this process of slowing down the thoughts from beta, alpha, theta, delta. And the slower our thoughts, the more powerful. The slower our thoughts, the more positive chemicals we create, because we create chemicals by thinking. Cortisol, the stress hormone, serotonin, happiness, melatonin, relaxation. We create all of this with our thoughts. And you can see it. It's obvious, isn't it? You can see yourself getting yourself into a stress or into a happiness or relaxation. So we can experiment with this. But interesting, there's a new wave that they're starting to talk a little bit about called gamma. And very interesting, the other ones are all about slowing down. And gamma is really fast, like, but it's associated with aha, realization, bliss. And I would say that's seed stage. Because in the seed stage, everything's there, but merged. You know, it's so interesting. And I'm curious about this because, you know, they're doing a lot of experiments on Buddhist monks. And they've done some experiments on Jan Tiban and a few yogis. When they get the results, they can't interpret them. Because they only, like, are measuring this kind of emptiness stage. You know, so now that they're starting to know what is gamma, I think they'll start to see that we have actually mostly gamma. Because this is like that joy and happiness that we experience in yoga is like the gamma state. So I think now they'll start to understand what we are doing. But at the moment, they just say, Jan Tiban was telling me, they did this experiment. They said, it's interesting, but we can't interpret it. Because, you know, it's very different to a Buddhist state of nothingness. But we really do need to take our meditation a bit seriously. And especially in clearing our past karmic accounts. We've got so much work to do that we can't really just hang around, you know, floating and wasting time and just kind of relaxing about the place, can we? We don't have the time for that. And so we need to do this. And just to mention, what's been a bit exciting for me at the moment is studying the Gita. Because I have a whole list of topics that I speak on, and one of them was the essence of the Gita. But in Australia and Asia, it was usually only like Chinese, Australians, Japanese who used to ask me for this topic. But when I was in Australia, they gave me this topic 5 times, and all Indian audience, even at a Hindu temple. And I thought, my God, how can I speak about the Gita to Indians? But I found a very, very good translation that was very deep. And it's just this one point I want to mention about settling past karmic accounts. It says in the Gita, the biggest illusion is that human beings think that they are doing something, when in actual fact it's the gunas that are getting everything done. Sattogun, Rajogun, Tamogun. And it says that in Sato, so first of all you have to think, how much do we really have control over our actions? Think about it. Because we have our past karmas, right? Can we decide? There's drama. There's sanskars that don't allow us to do what we want to do. Influence of atmosphere, of others. How much do we have control over our actions, really? No, I'm just talking about actions. So, what it says is that sato is when you only do something because it's the right thing to do. There's no other motivation. And also, and then the return of that is like well-being, happiness and everything. But I was thinking also, the only way you can do that is by aligning with Baba. Because first of all, you have to know what is the right thing. You know, that's one thing. But secondly, have the power to do the right thing. And the faith that by doing the right thing, it will work out. So I think the only way that we can do sato action is by, you know, aligning with Baba. And my experience is that when we do that, actually we can even influence the drama. And we're not pulled by our sanskars, our karmas, the atmosphere, but we can even influence drama. And neuroscience talks about a quantum field that's full of possibilities, a quantum field. And it says that when we're kind of on the same wavelength, we can pick up a possibility. Now this sounds a little complicated, but what I've experienced is that nearly everything I think happens. Like for example, I was in Korea, you know, they asked me to come back because Daddy Janki was going to be there, but the center couldn't afford, nor could I afford, a fare, another fare. But we just left it at that. It would be good, you know? And then I was in Cambodia then, I went back to Cambodia. Within 2 days, I got an invitation to come to Korea, airfare paid, all expenses paid, for an international interfaith dialogue. And that dialogue finished the day before Daddy arrived. What is that? Is that not having influence over the drama? Is it? What is that? The day before, not like even a week, then that would have been a problem, you know, you can't just stay away forever. But more and more, I experience whatever I think about it happens. And I think it's from just from this alignment that we can go beyond the influences. So when Baba says to settle past karmic accounts by remembering Baba, I think it's this whole thing, not just remembering Baba, but knowing that sato gun stage is what is, I have to live in my life. Only do things because it's the right thing. It also says in the Gita, you can know somebody by their faith. By their faith. So, you know, it's all kind of aligned with what Baba's telling us. Very powerful. Anyway, more later about that if we get a chance. But just that much, you know, to stay aligned. So just finish with a minute of silence and then I think we should go. Om Shanti.